Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this must. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In truth, today's shiur is picking up in the middle of a vigorous discussion that we started in our previous shiur on Daf Hei Omid Beis. So to get maximum benefit out of the first part of today's shiur, one is advised to be holding in a fresh fashion in the sugya on Daf Hei Amud Beis. But for a brief recap, we introduced a brisa with a pasuk featured. We have it featured in a firebox, the pasuk Min HaBokar, and it was pointed out that we need that pasuk to learn that a trefa animal is not acceptable as a korban, as a sacrifice. The Gemara then became involved in a very rigorous discussion that really started in the brisa itself, and that is, why do I need a pasuk to tell me that trefa is forbidden to be brought as a korban? I could have figured it out without pasuk power. In other words, I could have applied logic. And there was an attempt in the source to use the balmum, the blemished animal, as a jump-off point for this Kal V'chomer. And it had stated that, mind you, a balmum, a blemished animal, which is a type of creature that is allowed to be eaten by a commoner, by a hedyot, is forbidden to be brought as a korban. A trefa, which is forbidden to be consumed by a commoner, certainly would be forbidden to be brought as a korban. The question then was, why do I need the pasuk? So the Gemara had a number of points. Gemara went back and forth, suggesting that there may be, in fact, precedent setters that are items that are allowed to be, that are forbidden to a commoner, like a trefa, but are brought as sacrifices, unlike what we're trying to say about a trefa. If we can find something like that, that is forbidden to the commoner and allowed to be brought as a sacrifice, then if you want to insist on the trefa being forbidden as a sacrifice, you will need a scriptural source for that prohibition. Otherwise, we can fall back on the precedent-setting item that is forbidden to the commoner and yet allowed to be brought as a sacrifice. In the last point before we begin today's shiur, there was an attempt to say that I can learn from shatnez, from the avnate of the Kohen, which was made of mixed materials, which is something that in general is forbidden to the commoner, shatnez, the mixture of wool and linen. And yet we find that in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim, part of their priestly garments involved the wearing of shatnez. So we saw that you can have something forbidden to a commoner and allowed when it comes to Gavoah, when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara then rejected that attempt to say that the basis of needing the pasuk would be that shatnez or kilayim could have shown otherwise, because in the case of kilayim, the Gemara at the very top of Dav Vov says, well, ma'ale kilayim shemitzvaso bekach. The way the Kohen's garments are supposed to be prepared is that way and only that way with the kilayim. And that's not the case with the trefa. There is no mitzvah saying you must bring a trefa animal. Therefore, I still don't see why I need a pasuk to dispel a non-existent havamina. So we pick up from the top line of Vav and Aleph, Rav Shisha Breder of Edi Omar. He comes to explain, you want to know why I need a pasuk? Mishum de'iko lemeimar lehader dino v'teisi b'ma hatzad. Because by introducing elements that were already mentioned on Hey Omid Beis, I can actually create a common denominator between previously mentioned elements, and as a result of the common denominator, the Tzad HaShoveh, I will come out demonstrating items that are in fact Osir to the Hedyot and Mutter Lagavoa. And if that be the case, I would say the Trefa might fall into the same category as being forbidden to a commoner, allowed for all the Almighty, if not for the fact that I have the Pasuk of Min HaBokar. So if we have this Tzad HaShoveh in place, then I will justify the need for the Pasuk. And it goes without saying that what we are trying to explain throughout this sugya is the final comment of the Braisa that was on Hey Omid Beis, which mentioned that the wording there was Ve'im Hishafto, and if you have something else to say, I eventually need the Pasuk to prove the point. So what was that eventuality? What was the meant by Ve'im Hishafto, if you have something to respond? So at this point, Rav Shisha is suggesting the Tzad HaShoveh, this common denominator between previously mentioned elements. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to encounter a section that's bracketed, and this section is for skipping purposes, in order for us to get immediately to Rav Shisha's point, and to explain why I need the Pasuk to forbid the Trefa. Within the bracketed section, we will have, in effect, a quote from Hey Omid Beis, and on the section in the brackets is designed to create the Tzad HaShoveh. So as we continue in the Gemara, we saw Rav Shisha Breid Ravidi say, the reason I need the Pasuk is Mishum Dikulameima Lahader Dino. Notice the word Lahader has the inverted triangle. And just to remind all of our listeners, the inverted triangle was explained on the previous Omid as a response as to why I need the Pasuk to forbid the Trefa. And the reason is because without the Pasuk, I have this Lahader Dino, V'teisi b'ma hatzad. I would have been able to create a common denominator between a couple of elements that were mentioned before, and demonstrated that the trefa should be allowed, and without, therefore, I need the pasuk. So let's initially skip the bracketed section. You can see we have a bracket length indicator to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dash dotted line. And we would pick up by saying, after he said v'teisi b'ma hatzad, thusly hatzad hashova shebohen, the common denominator between the elements that were mentioned, and they happen to be the elements of malika, chelev and dam, the common denominator between these things, these items, is she'asurin lehedyot. It's also to eat a bird that experienced malika. That's where its slaughtering is through the puncturing of the back of the neck through the insertion of the Kohen's thumbnail. That, of course, is forbidden for a commoner to eat outside of the context of korbanos. Chelev and dam, forbidden fats and blood of animals, is also usur for a commoner. They are asur in lehedyot, umutarin lagavoa, and they are allowed to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Af ani avi trefa, so too I would include trefa. Af al pi sha'asura lehedyot, tehei muteres l'gavoa. Let it be allowed, l'gavoa, even though it's also for the head and for the commoner, let it be allowed to be brought as a sacrifice. And therefore, I need the pasuk to dispel what I might have learned from the Tzad HaShoveh between chelev and dam. At this point, the Gemara says, that's not a sufficient justification for the need of a pasuk. Ma lahatzara sheva shebahen. How can you try to prove the need for a pasuk from malika and chelev adam? She came mitzvah sebekach. Just like we saw already in a few of the previous dechios of the Gemara, the few of the previous rejections of the proofs for need of a pasuk, that when the mitzvah is to be done a particular way, even though it may be something forbidden to a commoner, but that's dictated by the Torah, that thusly you must perform the mitzvah lagavoah. But that's not the case with regard to treifa. You don't have any pasuk in the Torah saying that thou shalt bring a treifa. So at this point, we still don't have the need or justification for the pasuk to tell me that treifa is forbidden, something I could have figured out on my own. Before we go too much further into the Gemara, let's just now go over the actual common denominator, the actual tzad hashaveh that Rav Shisha was referring to. Now that's contained in the bracketed section. We'll notice an unusual marking in the bracketed section. We have employed the use of triangles, but they're dashed triangles, broken lined triangles. The reason for that is that we don't want you to read the bracketed section as part of the flow of Gemara that started right before it. On the other hand, we want to try to activate the memory or the recall of at what point each phrase was brought in, namely question of why we need a pasuk or suggested proof that we do need a pasuk. So looking into the brackets now, we are creating the tzad hashaveh that Rav Shisha alluded to. And we also have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text pointing, indicating Hey Omid Beis. That means if you look back to Hey Omid Beis, you'll find a corresponding arrow indicating Vav Omid Aleph. The arrow, you'll notice, about halfway down the page, this line of Gemara is taken from over there. At that point, the Gemara said, well, Ma le Malika, I cannot use Malika, the bird method of sacrifice in the base, bird method of slaughter in the Beis HaMikdash, as proof for why I need a pasuk. Shekein kedushasa oisarta. The only reason that the malika is usur is that it was sanctified at the point of the malika. It received its sanctity, and that is what created its prohibition, which is not the case by treifa. Treifa is even without its sanctification, if it's born that way or it happens in the course of the animal's life that it becomes a treifa, it's a more, we'll call it, basic or fundamental type of problem. And therefore, it's more obvious that the treifa should be forbidden, lagavoa. So, if I can't use malika as a basis for justifying the need for a pasuk, then we would be at a question, why do I need the pasuk? Chelev v'dam yochichu. We know that chelev and dam are forbidden to the commoner, and they're mutter l'gavoah. So too, I would have said that the treifa, which is forbidden to the commoner, maybe it is acceptable as a sacrifice. So to that we respond, well, I can't learn from chelev v'dam. Ma l'chelev v'dam shekein boim miklal heter. Chelev and dam come from animals that are themselves allowed. Just the blood of the animal is not allowed, or the chelev of the animal is not allowed, but the animal itself is a kosher, acceptable animal, as opposed to a treifa. So I wouldn't learn from chelev and dam a havamina that treifa might be mutter, and therefore I require a pasuk to tell me that it's usur. Well, okay, so malika tochiach. The bird that is nimlak is completely usur for a commoner. Not like the case of the chelev dam, where the animal itself would have been mutter to the commoner. The bird that experiences malika is totally forbidden. But we saw that you can't really learn from malika because of its weak element, namely kedushas osarta, and then you just go around and around, going back and forth between these two examples of malika, chelev dam, and end up getting nowhere initially. V'chozer hadin lo roi ze kiroi. V'chozer hadin means the logic revolves. This is not like that. V'lo roi ze kiroi ze. And that is not like this. Neither one is like the other. Hatzad hashava shebohen. The common point between malika on the one hand, chelev and dam on the other, is Sha'asurin lehedyot. They are forbidden to the commoner, umutorin legavoa, and allowed to appear or to be brought as sacrifices. Af ani ovi trefa. So by the same token, I will include trefa. Afapisha asur lehedyot temu teres legavoa. On a logical basis, I could see trefa being muter as a sacrifice, and therefore I need the pasuk. The Gemara says, I don't really need the pasuk. Malatzan asher shemahen shekein mitzvaso abakach. In the case of malika, chelev, and dam, that's the way things are supposed to be done. You're supposed to do malika to the bird. You're supposed to bring the chelev and dam and put it on the altar. That's the mitzvah, the commandment is to do things like that. But that's not the case by trefa. You don't have a commandment to bring a trefa. So what do I really need the pasuk to forbid the trefa? Elo amar avashi, mishum diikol ameimar. I'll tell you why I need the pasuk. Because me'ikara d'dina pircha, the original claim as to why I should not need the pasuk, namely I can come to the prohibition of trefa through logic, that itself, the original point of logic, pircha, has a hole in it, so to speak, is weak, can be rebuffed. Meheicho ko ma'isis lo, the Gemara now goes over the original point of logic that we learned on Daf Hei Amud Beis. From where did you derive the kal v'chomer to forbid the trefa? Mi balmum. Remember? We actually mentioned that today in the beginning of our shiur as well. We try to derive through logic using the balmum as a jump off point. The balmum, the blemished animal, is an example of something that is allowed to the commoner, forbidden as a sacrifice. Therefore, something that's forbidden to the commoner certainly should be forbidden as a sacrifice. But we're now going to show you that the Balmum has an aspect that makes it more severe than the Trefa. And therefore, if you'll tell me that a Balmum is forbidden as a sacrifice, that doesn't necessarily mean that the Trefa will be forbidden as a sacrifice. Ma le Balmum shekein osa boi makrivim kekrevim. A blemished animal is the craven. So a blemished animal is forbidden. Makriven is a reference to the kohen. He is the one that brings, he's makriv, he brings the sacrifice. What is the halacha with regard to a kohen that's blemished? He also is considered unfit. So the problem or the deficiency that is represented by a mum is more severe, because in the case of a trefa, although the animal that's a trefa may be forbidden, the person who is a trefa, kohen who is a trefa, is allowed to do sacrificial activity. So since we see that the kohen is allowed to do, a kohen who is a trefa is allowed to do sacrificial activity, it may be that a trefa is forbidden to a commoner. We know that from a pasuk, but I don't know that it would necessarily be forbidden as a sacrifice. As a result of that, the last thing we said was, I don't necessarily know that the trefa should be forbidden as a sacrifice. Therefore, I need the pasuk that's min habokar to exclude the trefa. Omer le ravacho savo le ravashi. 1 second, yotzei doifen yochiach. The case of a cesarean birth shall prove the point. Shiloh, that shall prove the point, being the, let's say the question, notice the triangle with the point facing up, we're trying to reinstate the original question of why do I really need the pasuk? Shelo asobo makriven kekraven. A yoytze doifen is, we don't say that the makriven are like the craven. The halacha is that an animal that's born as a yoytze doifen is not acceptable as a sacrifice, but a kohen, the person, a kohen who happened to have been born through a C-section, is allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And yet, what do we know about yotzei dofen? Umuter lehedyot. It's something that's muter lehedyot. The osur legavoa, an animal that's born through yotzei dofen is allowed by a commoner, and an animal that itself is a yotzei dofen is forbidden to be brought as a sacrifice. A trefa, which is forbidden to the commoner, certainly should be forbidden legavoa as a sacrifice. The question, therefore, is, what do I need a pasuk for? What do I need the min habokar for? The Gemara says, ma li yotzei dofen, you can't ask on the need for a pasuk from the case of Yotzei Dofen, Shekein Eino Kadosh Bevachora. It's something that when delivered, let's say an animal had a firstborn male child. The offspring, if it's delivered through a C-section, does not absorb the sanctity called Kedushas Bechor. Firstborn animals in general, if they're born through normal birth process, if it's a firstborn male animal, it is brought as a sacrifice. It's given to a kohen as one of the priestly gifts, and he brings it to the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice. A Yotze Doifen, though, an animal born through a C-section, it's the first offspring of that particular cow or animal, it nevertheless does not absorb Kedushas Bechora. Therefore, we see that there's some type of element to a Yotze Dofen that repels sanctity. Therefore, it is forbidden Lagavoa. However, let us say you have an animal that's born through normal birth process and becomes a Trefa. It still has Kedushas Bechor. So, I might think that since it has Kedushas Bechor, maybe a trefo could actually be brought as a sacrifice. It may be pointed out that you're not going to, even though it has Kedushas Bechor to it, if you know that it's a trefo, you won't actually bring it as a sacrifice. But in general, trefos, the category of trefo does not repel Kedushas Bechor. Therefore, I wouldn't try to claim no need for a pasuk based on, let us say, logic that uses Yotze Dofen as a starting point. Yotze Dofen, I understand, is more easy to understand why it is Osir Legavoa than the case of Trefa. And since we know in the case of Trefa, it could absorb Kedushas Bechor, maybe it could be brought as a sacrifice. Therefore, I need a pasuk. Balmum Yochiach. Here you have the triangle pointing up. The case of Balmum can prove, compensate for that which I could not learn from Yotze Dofen. Balmum, by the way, was the original point of logic, the original jump-off point, that Baal Mum is something that, though it has, it does get Kedushas Bechor, it's mutter to a commoner, it is forbidden Lagavoa, therefore a trefa, which also has Kedushas Bechor to it, it is forbidden to a commoner, certainly should be forbidden as a sacrifice. Therefore, what do I need the pasuk for? Well, no, Mala Balmum, this already we saw Balmum rejected earlier, and the Gemara goes over it again. Mala Balmum, Shekein Osa Bo, Makriven Kekraven. Balmum is something that is more problematic, so to speak, than a trefa, in the sense that the Kohen Balmum, like an animal Balmum, are not fit. Masha'en Kain, the trefa, we don't say the makriven are like the craven, and therefore, I don't necessarily know that the trefa would be osur unless I have a pasuk. Well, Yotze Dofen Yochiach. The example of Yotze Dofen, the Gemara now is simply going over that which we already said. Let the case of Yotze Dofen prove or compensate for that which was lacking in the Balmum argument, namely, in the case of Yotze Dofen, we don't say the Makriven Kekraven. A Kohen born as a Yotze Dofen is allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Yotze Dofen is something that's mutter to a commoner, forbidden as a sacrifice. A Trefa, which is forbidden for the commoner, certainly should be forbidden as a sacrifice. So I would say, what do I need the pasuk for? And you can see, with the triangle facing up, we're back to that point. What do I need the pasuk for? Well, the Chozer Hadin, we would end up with this revolving logic like we saw before, namely that the Yotze Dofen, we saw, doesn't have Kedushas Bechor. Masha'en Kein Atreifa does have Kedushas Bechor. Therefore, we'd come back to the Baal Mum. And you would have this revolving logic situation. V'chozer ha'adin, lo ro'izeh ki'ro'izeh, v'lo ro'izeh ki'ro'izeh, ha'tzar ha'shever shebohen, the Baal Mum and the Yotze Doifen, shemutorin le'edyot v'asurim le'gaboa, v'kol shekein treifo sh'asura le'edyot, tehei asura le'gaboa. Through logic, using the common denominator between the deficiencies of Baal Mum and Yotze Dofen, I could on my own conclude that a trefa certainly should be osur l'gavoah. The question then, once again, is what do I need the pasuk for? Well, and notice the triangle flips over. Ma la tzad al sheva shebahen. The common denominator between the Baal Mum and the Yotze Doifen is not going to, I wouldn't be able to use it as a point of logic for establishing that a trefa is certainly forbidden on my own, through my own logic. Shekein lo hutru michlolan. There is no allowance for them. They never experience a point of allowance. That's hutru, an allowance miklolin from their point of iser. Tomar betrefa shehutra michlola. Trefa has a certain leniency to it in that we find that even though in general it's something that's forbidden, we find a heter for it when it and that the Gemara now is going to try to find out what do you mean by that. So before we go on, at this point, you notice the last triangle was point facing down. We're essentially saying that I wouldn't be able to establish from Baal Mum and Yotze Dofen with any certainty that a trefa would certainly be forbidden as a korban. And the reason for that is because in the case of Baal Mum and Yotze Dofen, we don't find any hutru miklolon, any allowances. Once they are forbidden with respect to, let us say, with respect to the mizbeach, they are completely forbidden, and we don't find any leniency or point of leniency or allowance, acceptability. Masha'en came in the case of trefa, and we will find a hutru miklolon. The job of the Gemara is to establish, well, where do you ever find that? And that's the next question. Omar le Rav Acho Brei de Rabba le Ravashi. Trefa shehutra michlola mayhi. Like, what do you mean by that? Before we go any further, we just encountered right now a bracketed section to the on the inside margin. We have a note by the star. Hasugraim l'shem diluk. The brackets here are for initial skipping purposes. Kedei lishma retzef hamasumatan. In order for us to be able to keep track of the back and forth of this of the Gemara. Besoicham haGemara masbira es tmias Rav Acha. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara will explain Rav Acha's amazement or wonderment. So we will initially skip the bracketed section. Let's just go back over Rav Acha. Rav Acha was responding to the Gemara's claim that I cannot learn on my own from Baal Mum and Yotze Dofen because Baal Mum and Yotze Dofen are more severe in the sense that they are lo hutru michlolan. Whereas there was a claim by the Gemara, trefa is hutru michlolan, showing us that trefa is more lenient and therefore I need a pasuk. But Rav Acha responds to that and says, I don't see where trefa has this point of leniency. And if trefa doesn't have this point of leniency, it would then fall back into the category, let us say, of Baal Mum and Yotze Dofen, from which I could establish on my own, through a tzad hashaveh, that trefa certainly should be usher. So after the bracketed section, just a few lines down, ve'lo porich hachi, if you want to, let us say, reject the attempt to establish on one's own the prohibition of trefa from Baal Mum and Yotze Dofen, so reject that as follows. Ma lahatzad hashava shebahen. How can you attempt to learn from the common denominator between Baal Mum and Yotze Dofen? Shekein mumon nikur. Their deficiency is something visible, is seen. The case of the Baal Mum, it's a blemish that's obvious. The case of the Yotzei Dofen, well, the animal was seen being delivered in that fashion. Therefore, they are Osir L'Gavoa. Tomar B'Treifa Shekein Ein Muma Nicker. Should I say the same thing by a Treifa? But its Mum, its deficiency, is not Nicker. Treifa is, generally speaking, an internal organ problem. And since it's not an obvious deficiency, it's not something nuker, it's not something visible, mishum hochi, it's derich kro. Therefore, I need the pasuk of min habokar to aser the trefa. We must go back over the bracketed section. At that point of the Gemara, Rav Acha was saying, I don't understand what you could have possibly meant by trefa being hutra michlola. So the Gemara says, let's read over from that triangle which is pointing up by Rav Acha Brei de Rava. Amalei Rav Acha Brei de Rava Ravashi. Trefa shehutra michlola maihi. What could you have possibly meant by that? E lema, we've used a dashed underline under the words elema, and a few lines later ela. These are stages in trying to figure out what might have been meant by trefa hutra mechlola, but at each point there will be a rejection, and we wrote in the word dechia at that point. So elema malika de oilas ha'oif legavoa. If you'll say that the example of trefa, we might add right now that when Malika is done, the thumbnail of the Kohen is inserted into the spine, the back of the neck of the bird. There is a moment in the Malika process that the bird becomes a trefa, and yet that's done, and it's offered as a sacrifice, as an olas ha'of. So if you'll tell me that we see an example of trefa being hutra mechlola, that even though trefa is a realm of prohibition, there is a heter for a trefa in the case of the olas ha'of, as that is the way it is offered. Well, by the same token, balmum nami boifois ishtaruya ishtari. Balmum is no different then. You can't say, like that was said before, that the tzad hashava between balmum and yotzei dofen, that it's not hutra mechlola. If you're going to say malika is that treif is hutra mechlola by virtue of malika soila sof, well, balmum the same thing. It is also hutra mechlola, because when you deal with bird offerings, the issue of blemish is not a preventing or a factor of ruination. A balmum, in the case of oaf, a blemished bird, provided it's not missing a limb, doesn't represent a deficiency. And that's what's meant here, that balmum by ofos ishteruye ishteri means is allowed. Tamus v'zachrus bebehema, the need for tamus, for non-blemishment, and zachrus meaning gender requirements. Zachrus literally is being a male, but we'll say gender requirements. That is true with regard to animal offerings. We ain tamus v'zachrus b'ofos, but the insistence on non-blemished, namely tamus and gender considerations by ofos, does not exist. There isn't this insistence. Therefore, the issue of baal mum is also hutra, so to speak. So what do you mean? What could you possibly have meant that trefa is hutra mechlola as opposed to baal mum and yotzei dofen? Hello? Malika dechatos ha'oif lekoyhanim. Once again, we're looking at Malika as being the example of creating a trefa, and yet, when it comes to a chatas oaf, the Kohen eats the bird. After the blood application is done from the chatas oaf, the Kohen then eats that bird. So you have an effect, a Kohen eating the trefa. The Gemara says, Kohanim, the Kohanim eating it doesn't show me that it's hutra mechlola any more so than the case of baal mum, because mishulchan gavoa kozachu. The Kohanim receive the bird not in a direct fashion, but they receive it by virtue of the fact that the bird, the chatasof, was a korban. The blood was given to them as beach. Shulchan Gvoah literally means the table of the Almighty, the high table. But since the Kohen don't get it in a, let's say, a direct fashion, they get it by virtue of the fact that it was used as a korban, well, Baal Mum also was used as a korban in the case of Ophos. So we're back to square one with regard to our attempt to show that Trefa was Hutra Michlola. Not so. We don't see Trefa Hutra Michlola any more so than the case of Baal Mum. And therefore, the Gemara went on and said, nevertheless, if you want to show how you or why we absolutely need the pasuk and we cannot use the tzad hashoveh to say I could figure out the prohibition of trefa logically, you have to go on in the Gemara, which we already learned. And the last point had been with regard to the tzad hashoveh of Baal Mum and Yotzei Dofen, their deficiency was nicker, that was obvious. Masha'en Kain, as opposed to the trefa, which was internal, therefore maybe it's less severe, and therefore without the pasuk, I wouldn't know that a trefa is not accepted as a korban. The Gemara now goes on to a new topic. Ordinarily, when we encounter new topics, we put a slash in the Gemara. But in this case, we want to preserve the connection, we'll say, with the previous sugya, in the sense that the mokar up till this point for the prohibition of a trefa was the pasuk of min habokar. So the Gemara now asks, and we can look at our topic heading on the outside margin, the nosei, mekoros nosafim, additional sources, additional to min habokar, lifsol trefa, to prohibit the trefa as a sacrifice. One source will be a posik mashke Yisrael, and a second additional source will be kol asher yavur tachas hashevet. That's a posik in the context of meiser behema, the tithing of every year's births of animals. One of every 10 animals is brought as a meiser behema sacrifice. The animals are the new animals, the animals born any given year, are passed through a narrow passageway. They're counted, and they pass under a rod. And the 10th animal is then marked with a red dye and brought as Meiser Behema. There's therefore, in order to establish which one of the animals is Meiser Behema, all the animals walk through a narrow passageway for counting purposes, one by one. A trefa, though, is an animal that's ill, so to speak, that has a deficiency and it would be incapable of walking. Let's turn now to the Gemara. Utrefa mehocha nafka? Is it so that the prohibition of trefa as a sacrifice is learned from min habokar? Mehosam nafka? It's learned from mimashke Yisrael, which we darshin min hamutar li Yisrael, from that which is allowed to the commoner. That type of creature is brought as a sacrifice. Something that's not allowed to Yisrael, to the commoner, cannot be brought as a sacrifice. For example, a trefa. Inami, another possibility as a source. Mikol Shiavor Tachas Hashevet Nafka, prat to the exclusion of the trefa, a trefa animal she'eno overus, that's not capable of walking through. The question then is, what do I need three sources to teach me seemingly the same thing? Tzrichi, I need all of the sources. De'i mimashki Yisrael, if I would have had just that source. Have amino limute. I would have thought that the pasuk is prohibiting only those kind of things that never had a point in their development of permissibility. Similar to orla, those are fruits during the first 3 years of their growth, or kilei hakerem, these are grapes that grapes and wheat that grow together. The wheat that grows in a vineyard is called kilayim, and it's usur. Those are things, those are items that were never had permissibility. Avol hoysol oshasa kosher, something that had a point of allowance. Emo tiskasher, I would think, should be allowed to be brought as a sacrifice. And an example of something like that may be a trefa that developed somewhere in after it's born. It developed to trefus, but before that it was actually kosher, it was all right. So how do I know that something like that is also as a korban? Kosav rachmona kol asher yavor. Therefore, I need the next source to exclude something that did have a shas hakosher. V'i kosav rachmona kol asher yavor hava amino limute hecho denitrefa ulebesov higdisha. I would think that only something that first was a trefa and then someone attempted to sanctify it. Dumya, the miser, similar to the case of the miser, where the animal had become a trefa and then was sanctified. Aval higdisha ulebesof nitrefa, something that was initially sanctified and subsequently became a trefa, the be'idno de akdisha, havechazya, that at the point that it was sanctified, it was fit. Emotis kasher, I would have thought that it should be allowed as a korban. Kosav rachmono min habokar. Therefore, I need the min habokar to preclude that case as well. The Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, we have a topic heading, and it says under the Nosei heading, Rishima shel psulim l'kmitza. We have lists in this Mishnah, one list of those people that are prohibited from doing the kmitza, the taking of the handful of the meal offering, and if they do it, so they will passel it. And the second list, dvorim hapoislim hakmitz atzmo, situations or elements that ruin the handful of meal offering itself. The Mishnah, echod minchas chote ve'echod kol hamenachos, whether it be a minchas chote or it be a or any of the other menachos, shekamtzon, zar, onain, and the list follows. Before we go on, the Gemara will take note of the opening line of the Mishnah. Why was it necessary for the Mishnah to single out the Minchas Chote when, after all, the Minchas Chote is just one of all the other Menachos as well? As we said, the Gemara will deal with that point. But that's the reason for our squiggle underlining of the words Echad, is to highlight the fact that there are two phrases that could have been taught really as a simpler one phrase, kol hamenachos shekamtzon, that would have included the minchas chote as well. As we said, the Gemara will deal with that. So in this list you have a zar, a non-kohen, an onain, a person whose close relative died and hasn't been buried yet. Tevul yom, he is a person that had been tomei, that immersed himself in the mikveh but has not experienced Harav Shemesh, the sun setting, yet he's still considered unfit for sacrificial activity. Mechusar begadim, a kohen who isn't wearing all of his big day kahuna. Mechusar kipurim, this is a type of person who had been tomei with the necessity of bringing a korban on the eighth day of his purification a week, and up till the point he actually brings these sacrifices, he's unfit for sacrificial activity. He's called a mechusar kipurim. Kipurim is a word for sacrifices. He's lacking the sacrifices. Also, shelo rochas yodov v'raglov, every kohen who comes to do avoda in the Beis HaMikdash has to wash his hands and feet from the kior, a water tank that is in the Azora, and if he doesn't do it, he's called a lo rochas yodov v'raglov. Orel, an uncircumcised Kohen. And Rashi points out the reason his non-circumcision is because he had brothers that died as a result of the milah before him. Nevertheless, he is uncircumcised. Tomei, if he is ritually impure. Yoshev, if he's seated. The pasuk says la'amod l'shores. One must be standing when serving in the Beis HaMikdash. So, taking the kmitza by being seated is not acceptable. Omeid al gabi kelim al gabi behem al gabi ragli chavero. If he is not standing directly on the floor of the azora while taking the kmitza, if he is, let's say, standing on vessels or clothing, or he's standing on an animal, or standing on even his friend's foot, pasul. Komatz b'smoil, pasul. If he uses his left hand for taking the handful, he ruins the mincha. Ben besera oimer. Yachzir v'yachzor v'yikmoitz b'yamin. Ben Becerra says that if the handful was taken by the left hand, so the Kohen puts it back into the original bowl containing the mincha and retakes it with his right hand. So according to Ben Becerra, there is a takona that is a possibility. We will see later in the Gemara that Ben Becerra's idea of takon, of chazora, yachzir, of put it back in and do it again the right way, in fact, is not limited to the case of left-handed kmitza alone, but is allowing takon up repairing or redoing in the right way regarding all of the deficiencies mentioned earlier. This Rashi points out already here in the Mishnah. Rashi says, Ben Becerra Akulu Polig Azar V'Oinin V'Chol Hanoch, and with regard to all the rest. But as we said, that point will be mentioned in the Gemara itself. We have a slash in the Mishnah indicating that the next section of the Mishnah focuses on deficiencies not in the person performing the act, but in the handful itself. Komatz v'yola b'yodo tzror or gargo melech or kut shelavona. If a handful of the meal offering was taken and within the handful there is a tzror, a stone or a piece of salt or a kut shelavona, a grain of the Lavona incense mixed into the handful of grain meal offering. The komets is possible in Nesha Omru because it has been taught. Hakomets hayeser v'hachoser possible. A komets that's extra, that there's too much or it's lacking, is unacceptable. And the case, even though the Mishnah goes on to ask what are examples of Yeser and Choser, before we go on, it's noteworthy that if you have if there's an expectation of having a handful of meal offering, it means that which is in the handful must be 100% meal offering. And if there is a grain of salt in there, so the space that the salt crystal occupies in the handful is that amount that is lacking the meal offering. There's salt instead. So that, in effect, is a kmitza that's choser. Nevertheless, the Mishnah goes on to offer its own examples. Ve'ezu ha-yeser, what's an example of too much? Shekomtso mevurats, where the grain offering is sticking out of his handful. Rashi offers two possibilities. One is godush, it's piled up too much. Maybe he's referring to sticking out from the top of his handful or the bottom. And lishnachrin shenira kemach chitzetz bein roshe etzboisov lepas yodo, or where the fingers are supposed to come down, the tips of his fingers or the top part of his finger is supposed to come down touching the base of his hand instead of the fingers actually touching his hand as they're curved over. Nevertheless, or in this case, there's a little flower that's in there in that space, where the fingers aren't touching his skin, but there's a certain layer of flour between them. That's too much. The chaser equals, the Mishnah says, shekomtsoi b'roshei etzba'isov, that instead of the top part of his finger resting on the base of his hand, the tips of his fingers are curled over, creating a very small or very tight type of handful. That's called b'roshei etzba'isov, and that's too little. The Gemara now asks the question that we mentioned while we were reading the Mishnah: Lama li lamisna echad minchas chote v'echad kol hamenachos? Why the double expression? Listen, it could have simply said kol hamenachos shekamtsan zar v'onein, that all menachos that are processed by these incapable or unqualified individuals are pasul. Why was it necessary to feature the minchas chote on its own? The Gemara answers, and we might note that there's a long answer marking. You'll see the tuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line, and this takes us to Amud Beis, a number of lines down from the top. The Gemara answers, Le Rabbi Shimon Yitzdurich, I need the accenting of the Minchas Chote for Rabbi Shimon. Desanyo. Before we read the Gemara, we will point out that Rabbi Shimon explains Minochas that are sin related as theoretically shouldn't require certain aspects, certain additions to it, because they're coming by virtue of a sin, or because a sin had been committed. He explains that Minchas Chote, for example, doesn't have Shemen and Lavona to it. And the reason for it is that we don't want it to be a korban mehudar, literally a pleasant or a expensive, choshev, important type korban. So it therefore lacks the additions that other minochas, other meal offerings have, the oil and the lavona. So by the same token, I might have thought that we can compromise our standards with regard to who does the Minchas Chote as well, who processes the Minchas Chote, since it's coming on by virtue of the fact a sin had been committed. Maybe we don't have to treat it with such seriousness. In other words, the sinner sinned, we too can process it in an offhanded way, so to speak. Therefore, it's important to emphasize that the Minchas Chote has the same standard as all other menachas. The Gemara says now inside, the Rabbi Shimon Yitzdrich, I need the extra expression of Echad Minchas Chote because of Rabbi Shimon. Desanya. The following source, Omar Rabbi Shimon, Bedin, who, there are 2 points that he makes, and we've listed them as Aleph and Beis. The first point is more relevant to our immediate discussion, because the second point deals with animal offerings. The first point, though, deals with meal offerings, which is our topic. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Bedin, who, technically or logically, it should be Shetehe Minchas Chote Teuno Shemen Ulavona, that a Minchas Chote should have the oil and lavona as part of it, shaloyeh chote niskar, so that the sinner doesn't come out benefiting. In other words, if we do, because he does not bring shem lavona, he ends up saving money. So we would want him not to save money. He shouldn't be a sinner that's niskar, that benefits. Umitnei ma eino tuna. So then, if we don't want him to benefit, why in fact is it that a Minchas Chote does not have Shemen and Lavona brought with it? Shelo yehe korbono mehudar. We don't want his korban to be nice, and therefore the halacha tells us that the minchas chotei does not have the elements that would make it nice and pleasant. Namely, it's going to be without oil and lavona. Ubedinu shetei chatos chaylev tuna nesachim. A korban chatos, when it is brought, it's brought without the accompanying wine offerings that other sacrifices usually have. The chatos does not have it. But Rabbi Shimon says that logically, the chatos chaylev should have a nesachim requirement, a wine offering accompaniment. Shelo yehe chotei niskar, so that he doesn't end up being a sinner who is saving money, who benefits. Well, umetneima eino tuna. So then, why is it, if we don't want him to benefit, why in fact is it so that the chatas animal offering? This is called in the Gemara here, and we've made this point on other occasions. Chatas chelev is really a term referring to the standard korban chatas. The reason chaylev is mentioned is because the Torah tells us that one who eats chaylev will have to bring, if he eats it b'shoge, he brings a korban chatos. But it's simply an example of all other korban chatos. So why is it that the korban chatos does not require the wine offering that accompanies other korbanos? Shelo yehe korbono mehudar, so that his korban should not be pleasant. We just heard Rabbi Shimon's approach to the minchas chotei. So salka daita chamina, on my own, I might have thought hoyol v'omer Rabbi Shimon shelo yehe korbono mehudar, since there is at least a suggestion that we don't want the sinner's sacrifice to be nice. We'll say it in other words, since we're dealing with a sinner's sacrifice, Rabbi Shimon introduces the thought that we might compromise our standards with regard to a sinner's offering. Ki kamtzi lo psulinami tiskasher. I might have thought that if the psulim are the unqualified ones do the kamitza, it should be okay with regard to a minchas chotei. Komash Mulan, therefore our Mishnah comes to emphasize that even the Minchas Chotei has the same standard as all other Minochas, and that the unqualified cannot do the Kemitza. So I need it in light of Rabbi Shimon's suggestion. Ihochi, if that's the consideration, in other words, if the extra expression of Echa Minchas Chotei is taught to dispel what I might have thought by virtue of Rabbi Shimon's teaching, Hosam Nami, in the case of in Masechet Zvachim, which deals with animal offerings, listening, we have a long question. You'll notice by the long question marking at the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, if this is really a consideration of trying to dispel what I might have thought as a result of Rabbi Shimon's teachings, so then in Masechet Zvachim, listening, it should have taught the following, which it does not say. It should have said, Echod chatos chelev v'echod kol hazvachim shekiblu domam zar v'onein. It doesn't say that. It simply says, kol hazvachim shekiblu domam zar v'onein. Here the Mishnah talks about the unqualified people doing the kavod hasadam, the receiving of the blood of an animal sacrifice. But why doesn't it say there in Zvachim the same thing like we're saying over here, whether it be a chatos chelev, whether it be any other kind of sacrifice, emphasizing the chatos chelev as requiring the same standard? Why doesn't it say that the lema and say that the extra expression of echod chatos chelev is Rabbi Shimon Itzrich? Well, it doesn't say all of that. Alma, what do we see? Kevon de tonale kol, since the Mishnah there says the word kol, referring to kol hazvochim, the lo kotoni chutz, and the Mishnah doesn't have any exceptions. Kulhu mashma, the kol is an umbrella term including all korbanos, including the chatos behema. Hachinami, so too here with regard to our menochas. Kiva the Tana Kol, the Mishnah mentions Kol. It said we said in our Mishnah, whether it be a Minchas Chote or whether it be Kol HaMenochas. So we see in our Mishnah the word Kol. The word Kol could be, is we see, like in Zvochim, is an inclusive expression. Velokotoni Chutzin, it doesn't mention anything exceptional. Kulhu Mashma, everything is already included. The question then comes right back. Just like the Mishnah in Zvochim doesn't highlight Chatos Chelev, it doesn't say Echot Chatos Chelev, so too, our Mishnah here should not need to emphasize Echot Minchas Chote. Itzterich. The Gemara comes back and says, here, in with regard to the Mishnah here in Menachos, I have to make the point. I have to emphasize the Minchas Chote and the need for maintaining the standard, and not to think that since it's a sin offering, we should compromise. I would have thought without this phrase, since we already established, according to the Mishnah on Daf Beis, the first Mishnah, according to Rava and Rav Ashi in the opening discussion of our Masechta, according to Rava and Rav Ashi, we established that the Mishnah that says that Menachos that are nikmitzu shelo lishmo are lo olu l'shem chova, the owner who brings a mincha whose kmitza was done shelo lishmo does not fulfill his requirement. And we saw that Rabbi Shimon holds that he does fulfill his requirement. So just like the Reisha was not like Rabbi Shimon, I might have thought Seifa Nami Delo Rabbi Shimon. The Seifa as well is simply not like Rabbi Shimon. Namely, that our Mishnah is teaching what it teaches, but Rabbi Shimon would not agree with it. And I would have thought that Rabbi Shimon might in fact say that if an unqualified person does the kmitza of a minchas chote, it's okay. Komash Malon, the extra expression in our Mishnah is here to tell us that with regard to qualification of people doing the kmitza, Rabbi Shimon agrees that you need to have only a qualified Kohen doing it. As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a new discussion. In order to fully appreciate what we are going to learn, let's take advantage of our nosei, our topic heading in the outside margin. So we have a nosei. We are going to notice in the Gemara itself the firebox, which is one of the rare appearing markings, but it's used to emphasize either a name or an idea of something that will last a long time. In fact, we had a recent firebox on Daf Hei Omid Beis, for those who recall, around the expression min habokar, regarding the sugya of from where do I know that a treifa is forbidden to be brought as a sacrifice. Here, Rav is given preeminence, as will hopefully become obvious as the sugya unfolds. So in our no-say topic heading in the outside margin, we've written, Dino Shel Rav, Rav's teaching, Zar Shekomatz, a Zar, a non-Kohen who takes the Kemitzu, does the Kemitza, Yachzir, he is to put it back in, it's to be redone. So Rav teaches that if a non-Kohen does the Kemitza, Yachzir, it's redone. L'kamon ha... Later in the Gemara, the Kamon HaGemara Tomar will tell us the Rav Omar Es Dino Aliba de Ben Becerra. Rav's din is in accordance with Ben Becerra, the Omar Bemishna Komatz Besmol Yachzer V'yikmotz B'yamin. Ben Becerra taught a halachan as far as the wording of Ben Becerra was that kmitza done by his left hand can be redone. The Komashlon Rav is telling us here, the Ben Becerra Ma'afshir Tikun B'chol Absulim Ashnuim B'Mishnah, that Ben Becerra is not limited to the issue of a kmitza done with left hand, but subsequent repairing of that. But Ben Becerra applies to all of the deficiencies mentioned in the Mishnah, that all of those can be redone. Turning to the Gemara. Omar Rav, Zar Shekomatz Yachzir. A Zar, a non-Kohen, who takes a handful of the meal offering, it shall be put back into the original bowl and done properly by a Kohen. The Gemara asks, Vohanan Posal Tanan? Our Mishnah teaches that if a Zar does it, he ruins it. Rav seems to be saying it's not ruined. So the Gemara answers, my posal. What does the Mishnah mean when it says ruined? Posal ad shiachzir, meaning unless it's put back, so in the meantime, it's unfit. The Gemara asks, well, ihochi, if this is so, that Rav's teaching that it can be fixed by putting it back, well, hainu ben besera, then Rav is one and the same with ben besera. More accurately, let us say, not that Rav is one and the same as Ben Becerra, but if Rav is representing the Shita of the Chachomim, then, and he is explaining that the Mishnah, the Tanakama, that says Posal is really a temporary psul, so then, and the Tanakama is saying, as we just said, a temporary psul, it means it can be redone, well, that's what Ben Becerra teaches, so that there's no machlokas in the Mishnah, and yet Ben Becerra is presented in the Mishnah as being a point of argument. The Gemara answers, E de ise la komets bi ene, if the komets, if the handful is extant, is there, is present, lo pligi rabbonolei ben besera, then there in fact is no machlokes. Ki pligi, at what point is there a controversy between the Tanakama and ben besera? The choser komets, where the komets is lacking. In other words, we have a zar did the kmitza, and there is no, and the kmitza is gone. Rabbonon Savri, lo yovi mitoch beisovim alenu. The Rabbonon, the first opinion of Mishnah says, don't try to replace the missing komets by bringing more meal material from your house and filling up the bowl to replenish the lacking komets. Ben Becerra Sovar, Ben Becerra is of the opinion, Yovi Mitoch Beis Sovia Malenu, that you can replace the missing komets. Well, if that's really what the Mishnah is teaching, then E Hachi, we now see a quote of the Mishnah, and then we'll see what the Mishnah should say. The Mishnah teaches Ben Becerra Yachzir V'Yachzor V'Yikmos B'Yamin. And we're telling you right now, according to our most recent explanation, that we're talking about a case of a lacking komets, where the komets got lost. Ben Becerra in our Mishnah says, Yachzir, you put it back and do the kmitz again with your right hand. But there's a significant information that's lacking according to our explanation. It should have said, Ben Becerra Oimer, Yachzir, V'yavi mitoch beisu v'yamalenu. V'yachzor v'yikmotz b'yamin. Mi boyalei. There should have been an indication in Ben Becerra's teaching that you go back and bring from your house the missing amount and do the kmitz again with the right hand. That's what it should have said. Now it doesn't say that. So it's throwing a wrench into our explanation of what the Mishnah is talking about. Therefore, we have to go back to the drawing board. Eloki ko'oma Rav leben besera. Rav, as opposed to what we thought was coming to explain the Tanakama, Rav is coming to present the opinion of Ben Becerra, so that when Rav says, Zar Shekomatz Yachzir, he is going within the opinion of Ben Becerra. What says Pshita? Well, that's obvious. Ben Becerra says that if something is done incorrectly, it can be done again. What do I really need Rav for? So, Ma Hu Detemo, without Rav, I might have thought, Ad Kan Lo Kamachshi Ben Becerra LeBesmoil. That up till this point, namely up till we see Rav, I would have thought that Ben Becerra is allowing for a repair only if the initial problem was left-handedness. Avol b'shar psulim lo, but with regard to the rest of the list of unqualified individuals mentioned in the Mishnah, ben Becerra would not allow for a redoing. Komash malon, that's what Rav is telling me, though Rav is citing the example of Zar. Apparently Zar is representative of all the other deficiencies that they too, ben Becerra agrees, have reparation. The Gemara asks, my shno smoil, what's different about smoil that you said I have a havamina that maybe he is machshir only by smoil? What we've done in our markings, two lines up, we dashed, underlined mahu detaim with a diagonal slash or dash mark. The purpose of that is so that we focus on that as the point of havamina. The Gemara right now is going to be asking, did I, let's go over this last nekuda, this last point. The reason for emphasizing the havamina is, in effect, giving reason for needing Rav. However, if I can ask on that, if I can weaken the havamina or show that there was no such thought, I would have had no such thought in the first place. I would have had no havamina to think that ben Becerra is limited to smoil. Then I don't see a real need for Rav. The Gemara asks, my shno smoil, what's different about smoil that it seemed obvious that there's a reparation that one can redo it? The Ashkechon law hechsher b'yom hakipurim. We see that in the Yom Kippur service, the left hand is used. That has to do with the case of the bringing of the incense into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where the coals he carries in his right hand, and the vessel containing the incense he carries in his left hand. So we see that the smol, the left, is kosher for the Yom Kippur service. Well, Zar Nami Ashkechon Lo Hechshero B'Shchita. We find an allowance of Zar in the case of the slaughtering of sacrifices. So we see that we see the Zar as being considered qualified, just like we said Smoil was qualified in the case of Yom Kippur, and that's why ben Becerra was lenient with regard to Smoil. Well, by the same token, Zar also, we know, is accepted for slaughtering of sacrifices. And if that be the case, then the question is, what do I need Rav for? Remember, we said before that Rav was coming to dispel a havamina, that I would have thought ben Becerra is limited to the case of smoil. But at this point, I don't see why ben Becerra would have been limited to smoil. Just like smoil, we can compromise on because we see it accepted in the case of Yom Kippur. Zor, the non-Kohen, we see accepted in the case of Shechita. Now, before we go on, we've introduced a marking that is explained in the outside margin. We have a nosei, and we call it hemshech, because this is not a new discussion. We're in the middle of a discussion, and the mivneh, the structural note. We have this crown marking, and we're calling it a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track, because you will see, as the Gemara unfolds, there is a back and forth in this discussion. So the crown with the points facing upwards, kushios, they're questions. Lomo li es Rav. What do I need Rav for? Diyesh lahokel bizar. Rav said that I should be makil with regard to azar shekomatz she tikun azar that did the kmitza. There's a tikun. Well, yocholti gam beli Rav lomo diyesh lahokel bizar kira ashichon b'shchita ubeboma. And the double underline will be used to highlight these cases. We find a czar, a non-Kohen, being functional, qualified for the slaughtering of sacrifices. And we see at Bomas. Bomas were personal altars that at certain points in Jewish history were allowed prior to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, without getting into any details right now, but there were certain points in Jewish history that private altars were allowed, and when sacrifices were offered at private altars, there was no need for a kohen. A zar was qualified. So we see zar qualifications in the case of shechita, in the case of boma. So if that be the case, what is Rav telling me that I couldn't have figured out on my own? Then we will see that Rav is needed. Lelame deben besera mekil b'chol hapsulim. Hare gam b'li Rav yocholnu ladas ezeh. Even without Rav, I could have known that. Im kein my komash molon Rav. What is Rav teaching me? So we will see this issue, these issues come up in the Gemara, and that each time you see the crown marking with the points facing up, you have to realize that that is what's bothering the Gemara. What is Rav teaching me? With the crown marking facing, with points facing down, those are dechios or chulos. Those will be responses showing us why I could not have learned the leniency of Zarus or other psulim from what was just suggested. So let us continue in the Gemara. Our question most recently was, what do I need Rav for, as far as if he's here to teach me that Ben Becerra is not limited to Smol, but it will include the other unqualified, for example, Zar. I could have, even without Rav, understood that, because we see in the case of the slaughtering of sacrifices, a non-Kohen is qualified, is acceptable. The Gemara responds, Shechita lav avodahi. Shechita, it's true that a Zar is allowed to do it, but that's not an example of, let us say, compromising our standards with regard to sacrificial activity, because Shechita is not considered an avoda. It's not considered an essential part of the sacrificial activity. Of course, it's a necessary element, but it's not classified as an avoda. An avoda are those stages that take place after the slaughtering. There we have a Kohen restriction. We have a bracketed section, and the purpose of these brackets is explained by our note that's on the inside margin by the star, and that we have written in Matras HaSograyim, the purpose of these brackets, Laharos, to show the Ad Kan Ikar HaTshuva. At this point, we've really completed the main response, namely that I don't really see Zoros from the case of Shechita. Legabi, that's Iker Hatshuva Legabi Zar and Shechita. The Hainu Lo Hoyisi Lomaid Kula Bazar. I wouldn't have learned a leniency regarding a Zar Mishchita Meachar Deshchita Lava Voda. Besocha Sograim Kayemes Masu Maton Im Shechita Beemes Lava Voda. Within the bracketed section, there will be a debate: is it really so to classify Shechita as a non-avoda? But at the end of the day, that's what we will end up with: that Shechita is not an avoda. And after the brackets, the Gemara says, well, v'nelef mibama, why not learn that a zar is qualified for avoda from the case of the personal altars, where we know that non-Kohanim were suitable. And at that point, of course, we're reinstating the question of what do I need Rav for, when I could have on my own learned or figured out that, just like Ben Becerra is Mekel with regard to Smol, he would likewise be Mekel with regard to Azar, that, and as we see by the case of the Boma. Before we get to that point, though, let's go over the bracketed section that deals with Shechita as being a non-avoda. So the Gemara asks in the brackets, Velo, is that really so that Shechita is a non-avoda? V'omar v'zera omarav, Shechitas poro bazar psula. Pora is the Pora Aduma. That if a non-Kohen slaughters the Pora Aduma, it's unqualified or it's disqualified. Pora Aduma was the animal, the red cow, who was slaughtered on the mountain facing Mount of Olives, facing the Beis HaMikdash. Eventually it was burnt and its ashes were mixed with water from a live spring. And that mixture was used to purify people who were Tomei Mace. The slaughtering of that pora, the pora duma, if it's done by a zar, it's disqualified. The Omar Rav Allah, and Rav comments concerning that, Elozar v'chuka ksivba, you find in the psukim dealing with pora duma, the name Elazar, who was the Kohen, and chukah, that word, those words appear. The word chukah means, when you see that word, it means something is binding. Elazar being representative of a Kohen. So we see that a Kohen is necessary for the Shechita of the Para Aduma. So how can you tell me that Shechita, if you're saying that a Kohen is binding for the slaughtering of the Para Aduma, how can you say that that slaughtering is not an Avoda? The Gemara says, answers, Shiny Para de Koche Berek Habayasi. The Para Aduma was not an actual sacrifice offered in the Beis HaMikdash. It's not Koche Mizbeach, sanctified for the altar, but rather it's a different category of sanctity, a lower level of sanctity called Koche Berek Habayas. Well, the Gemara asks, you're telling me that the Para Aduma was a lower level of sanctity, and a Kohen was binding, well, the Lav called a Kenhu, then isn't it a matter of all the more so called the Kain, but we say Kol Shekain, Kotche Berek Habayis Bo Kuna, if the lower level sanctity, namely Kotche Berek Habayis, is represented by the Para Aduma, Bo Kuna requires the Kohen for its slaughtering. Kotche Mizbeach Lo Bo Kuna. With wonderment, you read that. It doesn't require. Could you possibly say that Kotche Mizbeach, which is a higher level of sanctity, would not require Kuhuna for slaughtering? Omer of Ashisha Breder of Edi. In fact, I can make such. I am able to make such a distinction. Midi dahave amarois negoyim delav avodaninu. Similar to the halacha regarding the viewing of Negoyim. Negoyim is the realm of Tzoras, Mitzora, which is associated with the discoloration of the skin or other areas of discoloration, where if it's declared to be a Nega, so the person or the item is declared to be Tome, Uboi Kahuna, and a Kohen is the only one who is allowed to rule on matters concerning the Goyim. Well, that ruling is not an Avoda, but yet a Kohen is required. So we see from Mar Ois Negoyim that the fact that a Kohen is required does not reflect that the action itself is classified as an Avoda. Therefore, Shechita at this point is considered a non-avoda. Therefore, as far as the Gemara before, the fact that we see a Zar doing Shechita is not necessarily proof that it, by a Zar who, let us say, did the Kamitza, that would necessarily have a Tikkun. In other words, there's no precedent in the realm of sacrificial activity that we show a Zar being qualified. Therefore, the only point I see of, leniency is with regard to smoil. Therefore, I need Rav to inform me that Ben Becerra's leniency is not limited to smoil, but includes other disqualifications as well. The Gemara asks, but still, the Nelef Mibama. Can I not learn that Zar is acceptable in sacrificial activity without needing Rav's teaching, from the case of Bama, from the private altars, v'chitema mi Bama lo yalfinon, you might say that we don't use Bama as a precedent for teaching halachas. That's not true. V'hatanya, we have the following source that says, minayin li yoytze shimolo lo yered, from where do I know that sacrificial parts that are supposed to be brought on the Mizbeach, let us say they left the Azor, and they're not supposed to leave the Azor, the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, before they're put on the altar, but let's say it happened that they did leave, and that's Yotze, and they were brought back in. We're talking about, let us say, the Emurim of a Korban, the innards of a Korban, that were taken out of the Azor, though improperly, and then brought back in the Azor and put on the Mizbeach. So we have a case of Yotze, that's im olaf, it's brought up, lo yered, it's not taken off the Mizbeach. In other words, it's not so bad. Sheharei, from where do I see a precedent for, let us say, leniency with regard to Yotze? Sheharei Yotze kosher b'mama. Yotze is a phenomenon of something leaving an enclosed area, enclosed by either curtains in the case of the Mishkan or walls in the case of the Beis HaMikdash. Well, a private altar, though, had no kloim, had no curtains there. It was just an altar standing outdoors. So, just like by Boma, we see that Yotze is no problem. There's no Yotze to begin with there. There's no enclosed area. So, too, in general, we... if something was Yotze from the Azora, if it's brought back in, it's not disqualified. It's left on the Mizbeach to be burnt. So we see that by a Boma can serve as a precedent for halachas, including the acceptability of a zar. So the question is, Rav, who told me that Ben Beseira is Mekil, allows reparation with regard to a zar, that I could have figured out from on my own without Rav. The Gemara says, Tana, the citation of learning from Boma in the case of Yotze, is not really so. Tana, the Tana that said, that we just saw, that said, if Yotze im olo lo yered, if it's Yotze, the innards of a korban that were left the Azora, if brought back in and put on the Mizbeach, don't come down, they don't learn, the Tana doesn't really learn that from Boma. Azois Teiras Ha'ilo Samechlei. He learns it from a pasuk. The fact that the Tana made a reference to Boma, that's an asmachta bi'alma. That's just a way to remember the halacha. But the actual source for the halacha is this pasuk. So at this point, I wouldn't really learn zar being acceptable or having a repair possibility from Boma, because I don't really learn from Boma. Well, Ella, the Gemara now comes back with a question. You'll notice that this is a long question, and the gist of the question is going to be, what do I really need Rav for? Ella, taimo da'ashmi'inen Rav. At this point then, how do I know that Ben Becerra is Mekil that allows reparation with regard to Azar? That's because thanks to Rav. Ha lav hochi, but without Rav, have amino b'shar psulim, posel Ben Becerra. That with regard to the other deficiencies, Ben Becerra would render it, would rule it as disqualified. V'ha tanya, we have the following source. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudov, Rabbi Elozer, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Mach Shir Hoya Ben Beseira Bechol Hapsulim Kulon. Ben Beseira, and here we have from a Tanaic source, Ben Beseira was allowing repair, was allowing Chazora, Tikkun, with regard to all the deficiencies. The Tanya, the Komatz Misham. Of another brisa that says, quotes this pasuk, "V'komatz misham," from which we say, "Mimokom shiragle hazar oimdois." From the mokom shiragle hazar, is a reference to the first 11 amos as one enters the eastern gate of from the eastern gate entering the Azora. The first 11 amos were the area that Yisrael, the Zar, stood. Ben Beseira Omer. Minayin Shiim Komatz Bismoil Shiyachzir Viyachzir Viyikmotz Biyamin. From where do I know that if the Kemitza was done by the left hand, that it's replaced, it's put back and redone with the right hand? Tamalomar Vikomatz Misham Mimokoim Shekomatz Kvar. From where the original Kemitza was done, it's done again. Now the Pasuk says Vikomatz Misham. It doesn't tell you what the problem was that you're able to do again. Vikavan the cross stamok sivbo, the Pasuk is stam. It's not specified, it's general. Mali smoil, mali sharp sulim. What difference does it make whether it's a deficiency of left-handedness or a deficiency of any of the other things in the long list mentioned in the Mishnah? By virtue of the fact that Ben Becerra cites an allowance for tikkun done based on the pasuk of Vekomatz Misham, even without Rav, I understand that Ben Becerra is not limited to smoil. So what do I need Rav for? Ela, notice how the crown marking flipped over. Ela ho komash molon Rav. This is what Rav comes to teach me. komatz v'afilu kidesh, if the let's say the improper kamitza was done, and the handful was then put into a second klisharis, it's a second service vessel that sanctifies or offers, let's say, additional sanctity to the handful itself. That's even it was kidesh the komatz in anticipation of bringing it to the mizbeach for burning, for being offered. Even at that stage, it can be redone if the kamitza was, even if the kamitza was kiddush, was sanctified. Notice we have a Roman numeral number 1 to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara. We've also dashed underlined this expression. Let's just glance at the outside margin, the Nosei Mivneh heading, which features 1 and 2. Shnei Lushonos Barav, two versions of Rav will be presented in the Gemara, but Nosei Takono L'Kmitza Shekom Suzar, regarding the issue of the Kmitza that was done by the non-Kohen. Ad Eze Shlav Yeshadayin Takono, up to what point can things be redone? So Lashon 1 says Afilu Kidesh Hakoymetz Bekli Shoreis Sheni. Even if the kmitza was put into a second Kli Shoreis, even though that's a very late stage, so to speak, it can be redone. The second Lashon is more restrictive. It says Rak Im Komatz Vadayin Lo Kidesh Hakoymetz. Only if the Tsar, let us say, took the handful but didn't as yet put the handful into a second Kli Shoreis. So we continue now in the Gemara. So what do I need Rav for? So Rav tells us, when he says that komatz, when Rav said zar shekomatz yachzir, it's not only that he did the kamitza, but even if he was mekadesh the kamitza in a second kli shoreis, ulafuke mehani tanoi. And Rav is teaching me this halacha to explain, let us say, our position of the Tanakama to the exclusion of the following Tanoim. The Tanoim that are presented, the following Brisa, are opinions that are coming on the heels of an unseen Tanakama. Unseen meaning, as far as our Gemara is concerned, the entire Brisa is not presented here. But the following Deos are being excluded by Rav. Tesanya, Rabbi Yosi ben Yosi ben Yosayin, for Rabbi Yehuda Anachtoim Omru Bamed Vomamurim. When is it such that a kmitza can be redone? Shekomatz velo kidesh, that the kmitza was done and not sanctified, as a subsequent or second sanctification of the komets in its own service vessel. Avo kidesh, if the komets was taken and it was then put into a second service vessel by the tsar, posal. Now that halacha is their halacha, but the Tanakama does not agree. So Rav is telling us, paskin like the Tanakama, like the first opinion, namely that opinion that preceded Rav Yosi in this particular brisa. And Rav tells us, even if the kmitza was mekudosh in a second service vessel, it still can be redone. Of course, we're talking about a case where everything was done by the tsar. The Iko the Amri, a second version of Rav, is as follows. Komat in. If the unqualified individual did the kamitza, there is takona through doing it again. However, kidei shloi, if the kamitza was not only taken by the unqualified person, but was put into a subsequent service vessel, that already is too far gone. Come on. Well, based on whom is Rav's opinion? Kehani tanoi, like the tanoim we just saw. We saw Rabbi Yosi, Ben Yosi, Ben Yosin, Rabbi Yudah Nachtom, Ulafuke mitanakama, and Rav is saying this to the exclusion of the Tanakama that allows Chazorah, allows redoing even if there was Kiddush Kometz. Maskif lo Rav Nachmon, my kosavri hani tanoi. What do these tanoim hold? The tanoim that said that if there was kiddush kometz in a kli, then there's no longer any takona. what is their opinion with regard to the following? E kemitzas psulim avodahi. If the kemitza done by the unqualified is considered an actual avoda, an actual sacrificial activity, well, afagav the law of idle matan kli, then it should be considered disqualified even without it being placed into the second service vessel. And yet they say, if you catch things in time, it can be repaired. But if you hold that kemitzas psulim itself qualifies as an avoda being an official sacrificial act, so once a posel does an official sacrificial act, how can you tell me that it has a point of return? E kemitzas psulim la'av avodahi, if you'll tell me that the taking of a handful of the unqualified is not classified as an official avoda, an official sacrificial act, ki avod lo matan kli mayave, so that even if he goes so far as to put it in a second service vessel, why is that called point of no return? Hodom Rav Nachman li'olam avodahi, v'lo gomra avodasa ad ovid lo matan kli. Rav Nachman explains that the kemitzas psulim is called an avoda, but it hasn't been completed. It's called an avoda only when you complete that particular act, and that act is completed only when you when the matan kli, when the handful is put into the second service vessel. And as long as the act has not been completed, you still have a point of return, and it can be repaired. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.